This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, halfway through the show. It's a Saturday morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Our Instagram feed is instagram.com/Illegal Curve. Some great photos from Jets development camp up on our Instagram. And our website with the latest Jets news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From theathletic.com, we're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Arthur Staple. Arthur covers the New York Islanders for The Athletic. Arthur, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good, guys. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, Arthur.
Please, Arthur, tell us where John Tavares is going to sign.
Well, I'm on the phone with you guys, so hopefully it doesn't buzz while we're talking. It still seems like it's incredibly, at this late hour, it still seems like it's up in the air.
It certainly does seem like it's up in the air. You know, after this sort of courting period that started last Sunday when the draft ended and the six teams that were able to fly out to Los Angeles and give them their pitches, do you have a leader in the clubhouse at this point in time, or do you think that it's really Tavares, his management group at CAA, they're just trying to come to a conclusion on what is a pretty difficult decision?
Yeah, I mean, it's surprising that everybody's sort of still in it, and I guess, you know, Tavares and Pat Brisson are trying to make this as clear-cut as possible with one winner announced, if that's today, or they don't want the news sort of trickling out, so they're waiting for the last minute. But, as of last night, my understanding was, the Islanders were still in it, San Jose was in it, and Toronto was in it. The other three always seemed like a bit more long shots, but no one's been told anything official. It just always sort of seemed, and from what I heard, that those three teams were the ones that had the most to offer. And kind of very interesting, different decisions with all three teams.
Arthur, how much of an impact do you think Barry Trotz as head coach is going to have on John Tavares deciding whether or not he's going to stay with the New York Islanders?
I think it's a lot. You know, I think the first positive step was Lou Lamoriello coming in, and then Barry Trotz obviously was another huge positive step for Tavares, and the fact that both of them spoke with Tavares really before they were announced in their new positions speaks to how important the Islanders' ownership felt that their hirings were going to be in the Tavares chase. And the fact that there weren't really a whole lot of other moves made at the draft, whether it was trading for guys or getting a goaltender, maybe I don't know if that's had an impact any other way for Tavares, but for sure, you know, the leadership of this organization has been very much the same during Tavares' 9 years here, and things got a bit stagnant. So these are huge changes, not just for Tavares, but for the organization as a whole.
You know, Arthur, you touched on it in your last answer, but what do you think the Islanders are going to do when it comes to goaltending?
That's a good question. You know, you get wrapped up a bit in the free agent market. You know, certainly this year it seems like guys are already, word is already leaking out that guys are ticketed for certain spots. But really, you know, when you get it, is it that disappointing that Carter Hutton might be headed somewhere else or Robin Leonard? It's just not a great group of goalies, and I would imagine, knowing Lamoriello and his history, in Jersey when he was very proactive in trading for Corey Schneider, and then in Toronto trading for Freddie Anderson, obviously both those were at the draft, and he did take a swing with Philippe Grubauer at the draft. Didn't work out. And maybe there's a mystery goalie out there that nobody thinks is on the market that the Islanders are gunning for. But I think, obviously it's not going to be Yaroslav Lott. Thomas Greiss is still under contract. He doesn't seem to have a lock in any sort of position. So I think it's pretty wide open, and maybe we're going to be surprised when tomorrow or next week rolls around with what Lou is going to do.
Arthur Staple is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Arthur covers the New York Islanders for TheAthletic.com. Arthur, you wrote about this earlier in the week for The Athletic. Where do the Islanders go if John Tavares decides to leave the team and sign with one of those other franchises?
You know, I think the trade market is probably the, you know, excuse me, same as it would be for goaltending, it seems, right now. They do have some assets. I mean, they made all those six of four out of the first 43, and by all accounts, really cleaned up with Oliver Wahlstrom and Noah Dobson and Bodie Wild. So I think that frees them up with some other assets that they have. You know, the previous regime, you're always evaluating with new eyes the current prospects that are already in the organization, and maybe not as beholden to some of them since Luden wasn't the one who drafted them. So yeah, I think, you know, when you think about a guy like Ryan O'Reilly, or perhaps there's some other centers that are out there, you know, they're really not going to be looking for a number one center. There's no number one centers out there, but with Matthew Barzal in the fold, it certainly eases the sting a bit, and they can look for a good number two center, whether it's a Ryan O'Reilly, or I guess in free agency, you've got a guy like Tyler Bozak who might fill a number two, number three center role, and they do have some guys with some center experience flexibility on their roster right now, whether it's Brock Nelson, who's a restricted free agent, Anthony Beauvillier, who's mostly played the wing, and Josh Bailey, who's really been almost exclusively a wing for most of his NHL career. But they do have some options in-house, and certainly I think Lamoureux will be active on the trade market.
Arthur, priority number one and number two is obviously sign John Tavares and then acquire a number one goaltender, but is priority number three acquire a top four defenseman? Because we know Calvin DeHaan is a UFA. Thomas Hickey, it looks like he's going to move on from the Islanders. They have four defensemen under contract right now, Johnny Boychuk, Nick Leddy, Adam Pellick, and Scott Mayfield. But if you're Lou Lamoriello, are you going to be after a top four defenseman here in the next couple days?
I certainly would think so. And there's, like you said, there's even slimmer pickings now in the defense market, not just with John Carlson gone, but again, guys that are seemingly already ticketed for spots. Mike Green sounds like he's going back to Detroit. Jack Johnson is going to Pittsburgh. Again, these aren't necessarily huge difference makers. You know, Calvin DeHaan, who the Islanders are still talking to, seems to be one of those guys that could be a very solid top four guy. He is coming off a pretty major shoulder injury. So it'll be interesting to see what they decide to do. I think, again, maybe there's trades to be made there. If Justin Falk is still a guy that might be on the market, you'd imagine the Islanders would try to be in on him. It's hard to say, you know, what sort of trades we're going to see. I think there's going to be an interesting scenario developing if the Islanders don't bring Tavares back. They've got the most cap space of any team, and that probably will allow them to take on a bad contract, maybe to acquire a prime top four defenseman, a prime top six forward, or a good goaltender. So, I think there's definitely some wild cards at play for them.
No, Arthur, you tweeted yesterday that Josh Hosang was skating, but he was not going to be made available to the media. Is that the Lou effect?
It certainly is. It certainly is. It's the Lou rules, and they're sort of selectively applied from what I understand. So, after the conversation that I had with Josh back in March when he was down in the AHL, that kind of blew up a bit and got him in some hot water with the previous administration here, I guess Lou is trying to be proactive and keep anything from happening right now. He's been at camp. He's only skated the last couple days due to some minor soreness, but he's still part of the organization, and I'm sure he will be once we get to September.
Arthur, how many guys are going to have to shave their beards on the Islanders?
It's already happening. I haven't seen any pictures, but Cal Clutterbuck was here working in Matt Martin's hockey camp at the Islanders practice facility the other day. He's clean shaven now. I'm sure Nick Leddy has already been proactive about it. So yeah, Barry Trotz is here and his goatee is gone. So there's everybody's falling in line already, even a couple months before the season starts.
Arthur Staples, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, we're discussing the John Tavares sweepstakes and the New York Islanders. Arthur, if Tavares ends up leaving the island and goes elsewhere, you know, is there have to be a feeling with the organization that they were just maybe too little too late in terms of a changing of the guard, in terms of getting, sending the, Garth Snow on his way and bringing in Lamoriello and Trotz, that, yeah, they made the move, but maybe they should have made it, a year earlier along those lines?
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's plenty of blame, I guess you could say, to go around, as I've written a couple of times already. Over the last few months, it starts with ownership for sure. Principal owner Scott Mulligan, co-owner John Modecki, they were the ones that decided to bring back Garth Snow and Doug Waite at the beginning of last season. I'm sure in part because of their relationship with Tavares. They did a lot of things with the hope that Tavares would stay without it kind of really being explicitly laid out between the owners and Pat Brisson and Tavares. So doing those things and then honoring a lot of Tavares' wishes not to talk contract last offseason, the owners refused to consider any trade, whether it was, you know, they put no deadline on any sort of decision for Tavares. And obviously when the season started to go south last year, that seemed like maybe a decision that was hopeful but a bit far-fetched that he was going to stay. And now here we are, he might leave anyway after all this for nothing. So it's definitely some responsibility for ownership, a lot of responsibility for Garth Snow, for the team that wasn't very successful over the bulk of his 12 years as GM, and especially the last couple years when it was crucial that the team show Tavares that they were serious about trying to turn things around and win. And certainly some responsibility for Tavares as well. You know, the players are certainly entitled to do what they do, but they can't be free from criticism and responsibility. And I think when Tavares and his camp learned last summer that ownership was willing to do anything to keep him, you know, as the captain of the team and the star of the franchise, it might have been incumbent upon him to feel like, okay, I need to make a decision here, project down the road whether I want to stay or whether I want to hamstring this franchise. And here we are, you know, a few hours before free agency, a few hours before the midnight deadline where he can get an 8-year deal from them. And if he makes the decision at this late date, and obviously it's a difficult, wrenching one for him, but the only team that he's really leaving a gaping hole is the Islanders out of all these teams that are vying for him. You'd want to point the finger at one or two people, but I think there's a lot of blame to go around.
Arthur, it was announced earlier this week that the Islanders are going to play an additional 8 home games at Nassau Coliseum. Are the Islanders still on track to start the 2021-22 season at Belmont Park in the new arena?
That's what I hear. You know, it's hard to get involved in the political sides of things or those things that are going on at the ownership level, but their goal was to break ground this spring. They've been working with the community on streamlining some aspects of the project. They've been working with local politicians, with the local railroad to try to improve the train station there to get better access. It's an ongoing process, and certainly things could derail it, but as of now, from what I understand, they are still on target to hit their marks, break ground March or April, and be finished in time for the 21-22 season and play half their schedule or possibly more out at the old Nassau Coliseum.
You know, Arthur, one of the things that teams sometimes need to rely upon when the draft class or when they're not able to promote a player from the draft or from free agency is within the organization from their AHL franchise. Is there anybody from the Bridgeport Sound Tigers that the Islanders can look to help for help this season?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of promising guys on defense. Devin Taves, the fourth round pick from a few years ago, who lost most of last season to a shoulder injury, but is a guy that all of their minor league organizations have been really high on, and was a guy when Calvin DeHaan went down in December. If Taves had been hurt right around the same time, he would have gotten a call up then and might have had some NHL experience under his belt. So I think they feel like he's a guy that maybe with a little bit more seasoning at the beginning of the year shows that he could fill a bottom four pairing role on defense, and he's a pretty steady guy, much like DeHaan. And they've got Sebastian Aho, who kind of came out of nowhere, was a fifth-round pick last year as an overager out of Sweden, came over. He was the one that did get the call when DeHaan went down, a smaller guy, is a little bit more offensive-style defenseman, but ended up getting 22 NHL games, and he'll be back for another year. So I think they've got some depth on defense that can help them out. And outside of that, up front, you know, Kiefer Bellows is kind of their top forward prospect right now, and we'll see where he slots in when the season starts, if he can make the team out of camp or needs a little work in the AHL. And obviously we talked about Hosang. If he's still in the organization, which I expect he will be, he's always a wild card with his play. So we'll see where he slots in and if he's able to make this team or be someone that they can rely on to call up out of the AHL.
Arthur, last question for you, and we always appreciate your time. I know it's obviously a busy period for you. What percentage right now, as we sit here, you know, potentially maybe 24 hours or 12 hours away from knowing where John Tavares ends up, what percentage would you place on him returning to the Islanders?
Well, you know, I was pretty high on it earlier in the week, and I think I got a little burned by that. So, you know, I guess I'll go 50-50 right now that, you know, if he's really choosing between the Islanders and two other teams in San Jose and Toronto, he's still an Islander for another 12 hours or so. So I think, you know, maybe that time and thinking about all the the support staff that have helped him out who are still here, and the people that have supported him, whether it's fans or, you know, all the people on Long Island, that you start to think more about leaving that, I think, as these minutes tick by. So perhaps that's going to be the biggest factor. And beyond that, yeah, I mean, maybe it's a little bit more for the Sharks than for the Leafs in my mind, but I think both of them present pretty intriguing possibilities if he decides to leave. And it's going to be a wild time if he says no to the Islanders, that's for sure.
Well, whatever answer he gives, we'll read all about it in your work in theathletic.com. Arthur Staple covers the Islanders for The Athletic. Arthur, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for joining us.
You got it, guys. Anytime.
Take care, Arthur. Thanks again. When we come back, we continue our free agency preview. We're going to look at the Atlantic Division. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Of the six teams that made a presentation, I thank them all, but I'm sorry. The Boston Bruins, you are number six. I'm going to have to turn you away. The aging core, all their best players are into their 30s now. They have a lot of good players, but I think their window is really pretty tiny.
The Boston Bruins, one of the six to get an interview with John Tavares. Mike Johnson not bullish on their chances, though, to ultimately get him to sign on the dotted line. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, you're listening to TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich, located in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. If you love Bernstein's Deli as much as we do, show them some love. Leave them a 5-star review on TripAdvisor. Tell them when you go there that Illegal Curve sent you. Continuing our free agency preview with the Atlantic Division, some news coming out of the Atlantic Division already earlier today. Bob McKenzie reporting that Mike Green is going to be re-signing with the Detroit Red Wings. He was one of the potentially sought-after UFA defensemen, certainly at the latter stages of his career. But if you need some offense from your back end, Mike Green would have been your guy. He's going to re-sign in Detroit for an average annual value of $5.375 million. No word on the length of that contract. Let's start with the Tampa Bay Lightning. The Tampa Bay Lightning, one of the teams that got an interview with John Tavares. But you look at them and you wonder, how could they fit Tavares under their salary cap? They have minimal salary cap space right now. They just signed JT Miller to a 5-year, $26.25 million contract extension. Reportedly, they're close to re-signing Ryan McDonough. That can happen after July 1st. They have Nikita Kucherov and Braden Point that they have to re-sign in the next couple of years. It seems to me that John Tavares I don't know how they fit him into their salary structure. As much as I'm sure they would like to work the magic, I just don't know that it's possible.
Yeah, I agree with you, Drew. And, you know, we know that, you know, the big boys at the top, Steven Stamkos and Victor Hedman, I mean, they're locked up long-term, through 2024, 2025. But you mentioned Nikita Kucherov. Probably one of the best bargains in the NHL at, you know, just under $5 million a year. He's probably going to make around $8 or $9 million a year for his next contract. So I agree with you. You know, John Tavares, if you're bringing him in, he's obviously going to be making quite a bit more than Steven Stamkos, probably in the $10 million to $11 million range. We talked about it a couple of segments ago, right, with Drew Doughty. I mean, Tavares is right up there with, you know, some of the highest paid players, or he soon will be one of the highest paid players, I should say. So, you know, I look at this Lightning team, and, you know, they obviously went to the Eastern Conference Final this year. And, you know, for me, I think if you're the Lightning, you're only acquiring depth pieces. And a guy like Chris Kunitz at 38 years old, you know, he's going to move on. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe he gets one last contract with the team. Maybe he goes back to Pittsburgh, or this might be the end of the road for Chris Kunitz. But, you know, maybe you're acquiring a veteran player to come in there on your fourth line. But, I mean, they're set up the middle with Steven Stamkos and Braden Point. And, you know, Tyler Johnson, you know, his name has been bandied about as far as maybe they move him to acquire another player. But, you know, if I'm the Lightning, I'm probably looking more at bringing in a depth defenseman, or even if you're able to acquire, you know, someone that you can push into the top four. I mean, we obviously know that, you know, Victor Hedman, Anton Strahlman, Ryan McDonough, you've got Mikhail Sergachev. That's your top four right now. But, you know, when I look at, you know, how the Lightning did in the Eastern Conference Final, that was probably their weakness. They looked a little bit slow at times with guys like Braden Coburn, mm-hmm, and Dan Girardi. And Coburn's a guy that's got 1 year left on his contract. Same thing goes for Dan Girardi. So I'm not saying that Girardi or Coburn won't be back, but for me, if I'm Steve Yzerman, that's what I'm looking at doing. I don't think the Lightning are going to make a big splash.
Dave, what about the Toronto Maple Leafs? They're another team that John Tavares, supposedly they've narrowed it down. They're in the final three, if you believe that, of the Tavares sweepstakes. What does John Tavares do to the Maple Leafs and their chances? They've been a first-round playoff exit the last couple of years. How does John Tavares change the dynamic and change the Toronto Maple Leafs franchise?
Well, I mean, we've spent pretty much the entire show talking about how good John Tavares is and what he is as one of the top centers in the NHL. And, you know, when you add that, you're adding a guy who's just going to take your team and elevate it to the next level. And we saw what the Toronto Maple Leafs have done for the last 2 years. They've, you know, one thing in the NHL that's been consistent is generally you don't win early in your as a team is forming its nucleus. It doesn't just happen. You know, a team doesn't, like the Chicago Blackhawks had to get eliminated. The Winnipeg Jets had to get eliminated. Not that they've won, but the idea being teams just generally don't do what we saw Winnipeg almost do, which is win with the core, with the young core, like they could have, mm-hmm. in theory, had they been able to knock off Vegas. The fact is Toronto has slowly but surely built up that young core. They've got a really nice, solid depth throughout the organization. We saw the Toronto Marlies win the Calder Cup this season, so they've got a ton of nice pieces. I mean, they've got a lot of veterans there as well, but they've got a ton of young players playing and growing in their AHL organization. So from a player's perspective, Toronto, if you can get past the market, which is, you know, again,
stifling.
No, but I mean, look, it's
a thin market.
No, but the reality is this. You know, some people hate the attention. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, it's such a short period of time in your life where you're going to have that spotlight. And the fact is that you probably want to be a player who, you know, not all players are going to crave it. But the fact is that it's not necessarily a bad thing. And again, we talked about this a little bit off the break. And I said, if you had the opportunity to go to your hometown, mm-hmm. and win them, like LeBron James did with Cleveland.
To be a hero.
I mean, that's something that is written in folklore. And you know, again, like, you don't have to be an NHL player to appreciate anybody who thinks about it from that perspective, to think to, oh, if you could, in whatever facet of life you are, do something that's significant for where you grew up and the city that gave so much to you. So I really do think that weighs a lot in John Tavares' mind. You know, of course, the media scrutiny is going to be a factor and the fan attention is going to be a factor. But I think he's not making this move unless Toronto's nucleus is sufficient to win him that cup. Because the fact of the matter is, similar to what Paul Stastny is doing with Winnipeg, these players aren't making these decisions purely based on monetary reasons. Because the fact of the matter is, they're going to get paid, they're going to get their money, and I'm not dismissing $1 million here or there, but the fact is that ultimately the Stanley Cup is the ultimate prize. So if you're making $7.5 million or $8.5 million, well, I'd rather make $7.5 million, you know, I'm just using that number arbitrarily, with a Stanley Cup as a potential prize, than to be on a team where it's you have a chance, but it's not really, you're not an upper echelon team.
Dave, talking about the Atlantic Division and the Leafs, and we know that over the last couple of years, the Lightning, the Bruins, the Leafs, those three teams have been the class of the division. To me, the Buffalo Sabres are one of the most interesting teams right now, because we know they acquired Connor Sheary and Matt Hunwick earlier this week, Drew, mm-hmm. In exchange for a conditional fourth-round pick. And they obviously just drafted Rasmus Dahlin first overall, and he's going to step right into the NHL. But when you consider that Ryan O'Reilly's in play, and you consider that a guy like Casey Mittelstadt, he's going to get an opportunity to play in the NHL next year. He was an eighth overall pick in the 2017 draft. To me, they're one of the most fascinating teams, because even though the Sabres probably won't be a playoff team next year, and they certainly won't be a Stanley Cup contender, with all of the young players they have, Alex Nylander, Rasmus Dahlin, you know, we mentioned Casey Mittelstadt.
Connor Sheary coming over from the
Connor
Penguins.
Connor Sheary, they're set to sign Carter Hutton as their number one goaltender. I mean, this is going to be a much better team this year in the Atlantic Division.
Before we go to break, and we're going to bring in Kristen Anderson of the Calgary Herald on the other side, a quick note about Steve Mason. Mason, who was traded from the Jets to the Montreal Canadiens earlier today, is going to be placed on unconditional waivers at noon and to be bought out from his contract. So the Montreal Canadiens acquire Steve Mason earlier today. They do the Jets a favor in taking on that contract. They get Joel Armia as well as a result. He's going to be bought out quickly in Montreal. Could you foresee a situation where he returns to the Jets? much like Brooks Orpik was traded to the Colorado Avalanche and has talked about returning to the Washington Capitals. I mean, it's not like there's a rule in place that would prevent the Jets from re-signing Steve Mason, obviously at a much lower dollar value, but I mean, well, hard to believe that it doesn't seem likely, but there's no reason why it couldn't happen.
I'll put it this way, Drew. It's not outside the realm of possibility, simply because we went over the list earlier in the show, and it's not like there's a ton of guys, and it seems like the guys that you may want as a backup have already kind of been locked up in certain spots, like Detroit and Buffalo and Philadelphia. So there are guys who have already gone to places. And so, you know, I mean, it's an asset, you know. I mean, is he going to have a bounce back and be healthy? I mean, that's a big question mark, but again, like I said, he's a player that the team is comfortable with. You know, we know that Connor Hellebuck is going to be playing the majority of the starts. Mm-hmm. You know, Steve Mason gets injured. They're not afraid to call up Eric Comrie and have him kind of, again, sit in that backup role. So it's not, let's put it this way, it's definitely not outside the realm of possibility.
You wonder if Steve Mason becomes the answer for a team like the New York Islanders looking for maybe a stopgap, a guy who's had, he's had some success. I mean, not overwhelming amounts of success, but he's had success as a number one goaltender. Obviously didn't work out in Winnipeg, but you wonder, I bet you there's a market for Steve Mason. Obviously not necessarily at $4.1 million, but maybe at a lesser amount. Dave, quickly.
I'll tell you this, they didn't put that in their pitch to John Tavares.
That Steve Mason's coming as the goaltender. Yeah, you're right about that. When we come back, Kristen Anderson joins us. We'll talk about the Calgary Flames ahead of NHL free agency. And, of course, they were the busy team at the NHL draft last weekend, acquiring Noah Hanifin and Elias Lindholm. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Third and final hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on this Saturday morning. If you're just joining us, here's what you've missed. Earlier this morning, the Winnipeg Jets traded Steve Mason and Joel Armia to the Montreal Canadiens. They also sent a 2019 seventh round pick and a 2020 fourth round pick. In return, they received Bork. What was his first name? I've already forgotten.
Simon
Bork from the Montreal.
Or is it Simone?
I don't know. Was that one or the other? They received Simon Bork, who is a depth AHL defenseman, clearing a lot of salary cap space for the Winnipeg Jets. Just announced the Montreal Canadiens are going to put Steve Mason on unconditional waivers to buy out his contract, so he's going to be an unrestricted free agent looking for a new team as of about 11 a.m. or so tomorrow when the free agency frenzy gets underway. And one other buyout comes from the Minnesota Wild, the Jets' Central Division rival, Tyler Ennis, who they acquired last offseason in a big trade. He was really poor. He did not have a good season for the Wild. He's going to be bought out as well. So both Steve Mason and Tyler Ennis on unconditional waivers as of about 5 minutes or so ago.
Drew, we've got Kristen Anderson coming up, so we don't want to let her wait too long, but also Christian Reichel has signed a one-year deal with the Moose.
Yes, so Christian Reichel, who was brought into Winnipeg Jets development camp after not being drafted in the NHL draft, has signed a one-year contract with the AHL's Manitoba Moose.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Calgary Herald and Post Media, she's a good friend of the program. We're pleased to welcome back Kristen Anderson. Kristen, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, thanks. It's that time of the year where we make big deals out of players we really haven't even heard of. I was just going through Brad Treliving's deals over the past four seasons, and yeah, it's kind of a strange time of the year, but it's not, you know, and he said in the past, the general manager of the Calgary Flames, he said, if you're building your team on July 1st, you're probably not going to have a lot of success. I think that rings true pretty much every year. I mean, obviously the John Tavares thing this year is a little bit different, but it's kind of a weird period that we make a big deal of.
So in that regard, you're not expecting the Calgary Flames to be especially active tomorrow when it comes to free agency?
I mean, they made a pretty big deal at the draft last weekend, yeah, to get Elias Lindholm and Noah Hanifin. So, you know, you fill some needs there, you serve some needs there. There's still some holes on the roster because the Flames are kind of clearly moving on from center Nick Shore, winger Christopher Stieg, and longtime center Matt Stajan. He's kind of been a workhorse, but clearly moving on from those UFAs. And So there are some holes. I think that a guy like Derek Ryan would make a lot of sense in Calgary. I know that he met with the team yesterday. He has some history with Bill Peters, having played for him in Spokane and having played for him with the Hurricanes. He's a right shot center, which they need, obviously. But it's kind of, and Brad Schilling really has made a few interesting deals at July 1st over the past few seasons. Like in 2014, he signed Jonas Hiller, Mason Raymond, Derek Englund. 2015, he signed Michael Frolich, Derek Grant, traded Max Reinhardt. In 2016, he signed Chad Johnson and Troy Brouwer. And then last year, he was pretty quiet and signed just a couple of depth forwards in Marek Hrivík and Luke Gazdik, who really didn't see a lot of time at the NHL level last year. So I wouldn't put it past him to make maybe one or two depth forward signings, including Derek Ryan. But it won't be as big of a splash as it has been in years past.
Christian, you mentioned the big trade that we saw last Saturday, which saw Elias Lindholm and Noah Hanifin joined the Calgary Flames, and then Michael Ferland and Dougie Hamilton went the other way to Carolina. Both of those players that the Calgary Flames acquired, Noah Hanifin and Elias Lindholm, as you know, don't have contracts right now. When are you expecting those contracts to get done, and how many years are you expecting Lindholm and Hanifin to get? Are we talking about a 7 or 8 year deal for both of these players?
I don't think that it's going to be quite that long, maybe even for Noah Hanifin at least. Like, it'll probably be a bit of a bridge contract. He of course, just doesn't have the experience and is still relatively unproven. I know he was a pretty high draft pick, fifth overall in 2015, but I would see him getting a bridge contract. And plus, the Flames have a bit of, they need to sign Matthew Tkachuk pretty, I would assume the negotiations maybe, I don't know if they've started already, but you expect them to try and get that deal done. Elias Lindholm told me that he'd prefer a long-term deal. It would be nice for him to get a long-term deal. And I could see the Flames doing that, maybe a 4 or 5 year deal. But again, like, these guys are relatively unproven, but, you know, you'd have to think that Brad Treliving sweetened the pot in terms of to make the trade happen. And I would see that happening in the next week or two. I think those two are priorities for Brad Treliving to get finished. And probably the term and all that was discussed when the trade happened. I mean, you'd have to think that these guys would, and Brad Treliving didn't sound very worried that a deal wasn't going to get done. Of course it was going to get done. So I think that's also factoring into Brad's free agency plans and looking at the budget and how much money they have to deal with. So and the upcoming contracts are going to need to sign. And you have to look at Mark Jankowski too. I mean, he was a big, he had his first NHL year, like full year with the big club last year. So you got to expect that he's going to be getting paid soon. So it definitely all factors into this free agency period and what they're going to have to work with, wiggle room that they're going to have to work with.
You know, Kristen, you never like to see your first round picks leaving the organization. Emile Poirier is one player. In 2013, the Flames drafted 22nd overall. He had his struggles off the ice, of course. But were you surprised that he is leaving that the Flames let him go?
A little bit. I think it he took so long to get going, and then of course he had the off ice issues he was dealing with. Some alcohol abuse problems. Which plague a lot of young players, I think. And he battled that, and he was upfront about it. Last year, you know, we interviewed him during development camp, and he was forthcoming about all of his issues and how it deterred him from, you know, reaching his potential last year. And I don't know if it's too little too late for Emile Poirier. You'd like to see him get on somewhere, maybe sign closer to the start of the season or maybe have a camp somewhere where he could kind of show what he can do. But yeah, it did surprise me that they moved on from him pretty quickly, and especially just given what he had been through. But he just couldn't seem to figure it out. Like, it just took him a little bit longer. I mean, he's a really nice kind of north-south player. A really good skater, and he had a bit of speed, and he just couldn't seem to get it going. So yeah, it was a bit surprising. But I think the other, you know, like the guys that they let go didn't really surprise me here. And the players that they did offer qualifying offers to, there was no real surprises other than Emile Poirier.
Kristen Anderson, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Kristen covers the Calgary Flames for the Calgary Herald. Kristen, you know, the Calgary Flames, you know, acquisitions this offseason so far. Bill Peters is their new head coach, ex of Carolina. Elias Lindholm and Noah Hanifin, you know, as a defenseman and as a centerman, ex of Carolina. A lot of talk that they're in the running for Derek Ryan, centerman, ex of Carolina. It's not like the Hurricanes are a successful franchise to speak of. At least these players weren't successful, and Bill Peters wasn't really successful with them, in Carolina. Why should Flames fans expect a different outcome than what Hurricanes fans saw in Raleigh, North Carolina?
It's a really, really good question. You look at also too. There was lots of talk that Bill Peters lost the room at some point during last season, and players just weren't listening to him. Which is interesting that they traded for these two guys as well. And both players obviously said that they enjoyed playing for Peters. They wouldn't tell me any different, at least. And then you look at a guy like Derek Ryan, who broke into the NHL at 29 years old. Like, it is his NHL career has only just begun, which is a little bit strange. He's a little bit of a late bloomer. There's lots of reason for skepticism. I'd be skeptical if I was a fan. Like, what are these guys going to bring to the table? You have to kind of look beyond those immediate points, though, and like the overall success story or the success record of the Hurricanes. And you know, you look at Bill Peters' record in Carolina, wasn't that great? And like, why should fans be excited about these guys? You have to look at it as a fresh start. I mean, we've seen it with players over the years that just need a change of pace, a change of scenery, and maybe, you know, maybe they'll be energized by playing in a Canadian market. Noah Hanifin played with Johnny Gaudreau's little brother at Boston College, and then he grew up with Matthew Tkachuk. He's familiar with some of the guys in the dressing room, and they're looking for a chemistry change in the dressing room as well. So they're going to be open arms with these guys. And then Elias Lindholm, too. Like, I mean, he's an upgrade. Like, the Flames don't really have a lot of... They needed a skilled forward to play with Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan, and that's where Elias Lindholm is supposed to line up to start the season. It's kind of a fresh slate right now. You have to look at it that way. But, yeah, you definitely look at, what's going to change now? Change of scenery in Calgary, is that really going to make a difference? I guess time will tell.
Kristen, wanted to ask you about the goaltending. We know that Mike Smith, he's got 1 year left on his contract. He's going to get the majority of starts, or he should get the majority of starts in net for the Flames next year. Do you expect Brad Treliving to maybe acquire a goaltender to push Mike Smith? Or because John Gillies has been that kind of... heir apparent there in net for the Flames for quite some time now. He's 24 years old, played a bit for the Flames last year. Do you expect John Gillies to get an extended look as the backup to Mike Smith next year?
Yeah, I think that they're also really high on David Rittich. I know that he's kind of an under the radar type of guy. He was a bit of an unknown. They signed him from the Czech League, and he played in their farm system 2 years ago. And like for the majority of the season, and then they brought him up for one game, and then, you know, when everything kind of fell apart with Eddie Lack last year as Mike Smith's backup when he got hurt, David Rittich kind of came in as this super confident guy, and he really did well, and he was really relied upon actually when Mike Smith was hurt for a while, and he was expected to carry the ball. So I'd see a pretty competitive training camp between John Gillies and David Rittich. And, you know, maybe it's the fire that needs to be lit under John Gillies, because not that he's had sort of everything given to him. I know he's worked really hard to get where he is. And he's, you know, kind of a quieter guy. David Rittich is kind of the opposite, and he's really well liked in the dressing room. It's it's really an interesting, it's going to be one of the most interesting stories out of training camp, whether or not John Gillies can stick with his playing ability, or are they going to go back to David Rittich? Because you look at Mike Smith, and yeah, he is getting older. I know Brad Treliving always says, well, he's kind of started later. He started his NHL career later and put on some miles later in his career, so he's still kind of got a lot left in his tank, so he's not really turning 37 like biologically he is, but yeah, you gotta expect that he's not gonna his workload will be a little bit different this year, although he would never admit that, but I think that they would probably like it to be a little bit different, so that he doesn't get hurt. So you have to look at that too, and David Rittich really played a lot of games for the Flames last year and really performed. So one of the most interesting battles of training camp in my mind is the battle between David Rittich and backup John Gillies.
Kristen, last question for you. On his way out to Carolina, Dougie Hamilton was criticized for maybe not being a good fit with the team and in the dressing room. From your perspective, covering the team, knowing what you know about the team, were those fair criticisms, or was it maybe a little bit unfair to Dougie Hamilton as he was on his way out to North Carolina?
Yeah, I think that we all make assumptions in life when these types of things happen, and we'll never really know the true story unless we've been in the dressing room, right? I can make observations. I cover the team. I travel with the team. I say hello to them in the morning before they get to the rink and see them wherever. And there's no doubt about it. Like he's not maybe your stereotypical hockey player. He's maybe more reserved or maybe a little bit quieter, but I think it's a little bit unfair to suggest that he was a cancer in the dressing room, or he was just, you know, an awful teammate. I don't think that was the case. I have a lot of colleagues in the organization that worked with Dougie Hamilton in community events, and he was so good in the community and so good with the Children's Hospital and always like volunteering to do that kind of stuff. And but it really does make a difference what the sort of the internal temperature is, if he just wasn't a fit with this particular group, that's a big issue. Anybody that's been on a team knows that can be pretty detrimental in the success of a team. So, and it's not to say, oh, and then you look at, oh, well, he's traded from Boston for reportedly the same reasons, and this is his third NHL team. And he's just a different guy. And I think that maybe he will thrive in Carolina, where it's a little bit quieter and he can be maybe himself a little bit more, and media is not all over him all the time and in the dressing room. And maybe it'll be a little bit different, but time will tell.
We should all spend a little more time in museums and a little less time in bars. Kristen Anderson from the Calgary Herald, thanks for joining us talking about the Flames. We'll do it again real soon, Kristen.
Thanks so much. Bye.
Take care. When we come back, we talk about the Hockey Hall of Fame announcement. Ezzie's boy, Marty Brodeur, inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame. It's just going to be Ezzie celebrating for the next 10 minutes. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
Martin.
Yes.
It's John Davidson, Lanny McDonald calling, and we're calling you Martin and not Marty. Congratulations. You've been elected into the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Oh, thank you.
My favorite part of that clip is just how unenthused he seems about getting that call. And it's a tremendously awkward video if you haven't seen it.
No, I hate that. They're
not authentic?
No, they're not authentic, exactly. And they always seem so staged. It's never a good thing.
It's just a video of Lanny McDonald.
Although anytime I can hear John Davidson's voice is great.
He does have the great baritone.
Come on, if anybody was surprised that Marty Brodeur...
Of course nobody's surprised.
He has the most regular season wins in NHL history and the most shutouts in NHL history.
Of course it's not a surprise, but you just hear him, hello? Oh, thank you.
Like, it's almost like he's getting a call from a telemarketer.
That's right.
He's like, I really don't want to answer this call.
I also
Can I interest you in a ShamWow?
I love John Davidson, one goalie to another.
yes, and Lanny McDonald also on the call. It's a very awkward video. If you want to check it out, I'm sure it's on the internet somewhere. You can find it. Anyways, Marty Brodeur, one of the announced individuals who are
one of the two Martys.
One of the two Martys, yes. One of the to enter the Hockey Hall of Fame, Marty Brodeur, Marty St. Louis, Willie O'Ree, who we talked about earlier. We also had Gary Bettman, which I think a lot of people were surprised about, and Jada Heffert, of course, as well. Your thoughts on the class of 20, I guess it's the class of 2019, when it'll, or 2018, November 12th is when they'll be inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame in Toronto.
Yeah, no surprise, Marty Brodeur and Marty St. Louis. I mean, we've talked about, I mean, these two players so much. These are excellent players. St. Louis, obviously, you know, winning the Stanley Cup back in 2004, one of the best small players of all time. And, you know, we just talked about Marty Brodeur. I mean, you look at the records, he won not one, not two, three Stanley Cups with the New Jersey Devils. He was a big part of that. But, you know, for me, maybe, you know, the name that probably made me the happiest was Willie O'Ree. And, you know, Dave talked about it during the first hour. You know, we were able to meet Willie O'Ree when the draft was in New Jersey. We actually met him at a hotel room in New York. But when you're talking about what he did...
He meant hotel lobby.
Okay.
What? Sorry, hotel lobby.
Go on.
What he did, you know, for black players in the NHL, he was a trendsetter, the first black player in the NHL, and what he's done with the NHL diversity program. I mean, this probably should have happened a long time ago, but what matters is that he is now in the Hockey Hall of Fame as a builder, and it's great to see.
Yeah, that, you're absolutely right. It should have happened a long time ago, and the NHL was the first, had been the laggard among all the major professional sports in inducting the individual who broke the color barrier into their Hall of Fame. All the NFL, the NBA, and the Major League Baseball, of course, have done it a lot sooner. But I guess, like you said, Ezzie, at least it's better late than never. And so Willie O'Ree, definitely a deserving name to be inducted.
And
into
also,
the...
you know, great for Jana Heffert. I mean, Jana mm-hmm. Heffert, one of the best female hockey players of all time. Let's get Haley Wickenheiser in there next.
Well, Haley Wickenheiser is going to be eligible next season, yep. I believe, after she retired from her playing
She'll
career.
She'll get in.
She'll get in. There's,
I mean,
there's
she,
no question
she is
about
the
that.
Female Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah, there's no question Haley Wickenheiser is yep. a first ballot Hall yep. of Famer, and if she's not, then something has gone terribly awry with the program.
Yep.
Dave, your thoughts on the class and your thoughts on the inclusion of Gary Bettman as one of the builders that's going to be inducted into this 2018 Hockey Hall of Fame?
You know, it's a good class, and like we just talked about, I was really happy to see Willie O'Ree. And to me, I always like it when guys make it in and they're still alive, because I mean, it's always you get the mm-hmm. you get this honor, but if you're not around to see it, then what does it really mean to you? You know,
which is where the Hockey Hall of Fame famously aired with Pat Burns, if you remember.
Right. Yeah, no, I do, and that's my point. Is that so? I like the fact that they got it so he could be a part of the proceedings, and that's important, I think. Gary Bettman, I'm fine with it. I mean, the reality is he's grown the sport to what it is, and people hate him, and it's funny how like he's loathed in so many markets, whereas here in Winnipeg he's still, you know, highly regarded simply because he brought the team back. And, you know, like him or not, you know, the fact is if he doesn't agree with it, it's not happening. He could have put Atlanta anywhere he wanted, really. I'm not saying anywhere, but like there were other markets, and obviously Mark Chipman's group went a long way with that, but the fact is that, you know, like I said,
he didn't stand in the way necessarily.
No, and again, it's funny because for years, you know, he was the most hated man in this province in terms of hockey.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was actually shocking because, you know, every Stanley Cup, whenever he presents it, he gets booed famously, or at drafts he gets booed famously. But when we were in the atrium
yes.
at that first game against the Montreal Canadiens back in 2011, it was shocking to watch Gary Bettman walk through the MTS Center, which it was called at the time, like a rock star.
Sure.
The fans were cheering him, which is funny because it's not something he's used to, I'm sure. And it was, and I know he's well regarded in Nashville for keeping them from moving to Hamilton and other markets. But
Pittsburgh
again,
too.
Pittsburgh as well. My feeling is the guy has done a tremendous amount. Now people say, oh, he's done a tremendous amount of harm. I guarantee you the players, for the amount of money they're making, the owners, for the amount of money they're making, which he's more concerned about, are not upset with what Gary Bettman's done. And sure, there's been lockouts, and they've sucked, and they're brutal. But the reality is that, you know, he's grown the game to what it's become. And so, you know, you can malign him all you want, but the reality is his 30 and now 31 bosses are all very approving of what he's done.
Okay, Dave, enough about Gary Bettman. Let's move on to an important player who should be in the Hall of Fame, and that, of course, is my boy Theron Fleury. I mean, he's got to get in next year, doesn't he?
I don't know.
I've been beating the Theron Fleury drum for a long time now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was pretty vocal on Twitter about this, but when you look at his career numbers, you know, just under 1,100 career points, he's got the Olympic gold, he's got the Stanley Cup, what he's done, you know, with his motivational speaking and what he went through during his junior career, the role model that he's been for so many young people, not just hockey players, but, you know, young young adults and youngsters that have gone through, you know, horrible experiences in their life. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, Theron Fleury should be in the Hall of Fame, either as a builder or a player or both.
Well, the three biggest omissions...
I guess you can't go in as both, but...
The three biggest omissions this year that most people said would be Theron Fleury, Sergei Zubov, who a lot of people have been trying to...
he should be in.
...drive in, and Daniel Alfredson.
Yep.
A lot of people expect Alfredson next year. You know, I don't know, Ezzy, about Theron Fleury. I mean, I think he deserves to be in. But if he hasn't gotten in yet, it makes you wonder what's going to be the tipping point to finally get him into the Hockey Hall of Fame, you know, as a member of the 2019 class or the 2020 class or whatever class. It's one of those things that if it hasn't happened yet, what needs to change to you know, make the voters acknowledge his accomplishment?
Because I don't care what anybody says, he should be in the Hall of Fame. I mean, his career, and I realize, you know, it didn't end too well there at the end with the New York Rangers and the Chicago Blackhawks, but
with the caveat of that's when he was dealing, I mean, he was going through all the emotional trauma and you know, coming to grips with the circumstances that he had to persevere through and grow up with. He's a Hall of Famer in my books.
8-time 30-goal scorer.
He's a Hall of Famer in my books.
3 times he scored 40-plus goals.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about it. You know, 1,088 career points, 455 career goals.
We got to get Ezzy on the committee. 2019.
I think that would be a good addition to the Hall of Fame committee. I agree with you. We'll see if that's going to happen in 2019 or not. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Chris Dingman. Chris played a number of seasons with Marty St. Louis. Talk about his influence, you know, and of course, he's going to be inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame among this class as well. Talk about Marty St. Louis. Talk about the Tampa Bay Lightning. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are For the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio here. Quick programming note, no show next Saturday. We're getting bumped for World Cup soccer action. So
what's the deal with that?
Well, it's the World Cup, and I think that's the quarterfinals, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe it's the semifinals. I don't quite remember what it is next Saturday, but I think it's the semifinals, and they're going to be on the station, and we'll take a well-earned week off, and we'll be back 2 weeks from today. We're recapping everything that's gone on
at
in free
time.
Agency at 11 a.m. You're right. That's because that's the third place game. So again, no show next Saturday. We'll be back 2 weeks from today with a 11 a.m. start time for 2 hours of free agency recap. Everything the Jets have been doing up to for the last couple weeks. Basically everything going on in the hockey world. 2 weeks from today, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show will be back. Go ahead, David.
You won't have to worry because even though the show won't be on air, illegalcurve.com, 24 hours a day.
Dave doesn't sleep.
I do not sleep.
Exactly. That's good. You don't need sleep. You're already beautiful enough.
Sleep is for the weak.
This segment of the program brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, he's been playing to great reviews all week long. Chris Griffin in town for 2 shows at Rumors, 7:15, 10 p.m. Remember, great lineup of comedians coming up. And Sunday, August 12th, one night only. It's my wife's birthday. Should I take her? Probably. Ron Jeremy, going to be at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, one night only, Sunday, August 12th. Tickets are going quickly. Get them at rumorscomedyclub.com.
A lot of people don't know that Ron Jeremy is your cousin. A lot of people were wondering because you look so much like Ron Jeremy and you've lived a very similar life to Ron Jeremy.
Almost identical. Really, it's just an uncanny, the resemblance and the life I've lived.
As Drew is finishing the promo, I can see the hamster wheel going in Ezzy's brain. And I'm just looking over and I'm just thinking to myself, okay, is he going to go this way with it? Is he going to go that way with it? He went that way.
Yeah, I didn't expect him to go that way, but yeah. He's not my cousin, and I know, look nothing like him, but he's going to be a Rumor, so you can check him out in person, rumorscomedyclub.com for tickets. Trying to get a hold of Chris Dingman, having some trouble doing that, so let's continue on with our talk about free agency, as it'll have begun less than 24 hours from now. Remember, Paul Edmonds and Ryan Brandt have free agency frenzy coverage tomorrow from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. here on the station. You know, is there a player in particular, Ezzy, that's sort of maybe a little under the radar that you think could be a valued addition to one of the teams in the NHL? I mean, Derek Ryan is a guy that there's a lot of talk about him. Toronto supposedly interested. Vancouver supposedly interested. We know Calgary Flames supposedly interested. You know, it's one of these things where a lot of these guys who aren't what I'll describe as household names really become household names when July 1st hits.
Yeah, Derek Ryan is coming off of a career year with the Carolina Hurricanes, 15 goal season. And I mean, if the Calgary Flames do end up signing Derek Ryan to a contract, and I'd imagine that's going to be a 2 or 3 year deal, it's going to be as a bottom six center, right? It's going to be probably a third line center role, a fourth line center role. And he's the type of guy that's kind of that Swiss Army knife. But I think when you're talking about free agency in the trade market coming up, we know, and we've talked about the big names out there. Mm-hmm. And Erik Karlsson is one of those big names out there. Ryan O'Reilly is one of those big names out there. And if the Ryan O'Reilly trade ends up coming to fruition with the Montreal Canadiens, it makes a lot of sense, because we know that, you know, they need to bring in a second line center to play behind Jonathan Drouin. Right, sure. Now that Alex Galchenyuk is gone, even though Galchenyuk wasn't playing center, O'Reilly makes a lot of sense. But
let me ask you this, though. Ryan O'Reilly on July 1st at midnight tonight gets a $7.5 million signing bonus from the Buffalo Sabres. Most of his contract is paid out in signing bonus, so he gets a big lump sum payment tonight on July 1st. If you're the Buffalo Sabres, why are you trading Ryan O'Reilly?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it...
Doesn't he help your team way more than whatever you get in return, theoretically?
Right. I agree with that. And, you know, O'Reilly's a guy that's won the Lady Byng Trophy. He's a really good player. He's kind of a your 55 to 60 point guy every single year. He's not in that upper echelon of centers, but he's a guy
that plays in all situations.
Right. He plays that two-way game, as you mentioned, power play, penalty kill, you know, a really good player. Wanted to, you know, just mention, I don't want to not answer the question, Drew, but I do think that there is an argument to be made for Buffalo keeping O'Reilly. Riley Nash is another guy that I have to give Mike Kelly a lot of credit for. Mike Kelly, of course, good friend of the program, you know, works for TSN and the NHL Network, and he also has a website called The Point, and he does a really good job. Riley Nash's underlying numbers are really good. He's a guy who was the third line center for the Bruins coming off of a career year, 15 goals, 41 points. Riley Nash is a guy that could be flying under the radar, but could be a really good fit on a lot of teams as a third line center.
Yeah, it certainly would be. I mean, what about the Tampa Bay Lightning? We know that they're in the running, supposedly, for John Tavares. They signed JT Miller to a 5-year, $26.25 million contract extension.
Yeah, they gave him a lot of money. I mean, JT Miller's a really good player, but it's a lot of cake.
It's a lot of money, especially for a team like the Lightning that have... I mean, it's not that they have salary cap issues, but they certainly have a lot of money tied up with a lot of players, and they need to sign two very important pieces to their team next season, Nikita Kucherov and Braden Point. So getting JT Miller, I mean, he's a good player. And he's, you know, they acquired him at the trade deadline from the New York Rangers, and he's coming off a year where he had 58 points in 82 games. So... he's a good player, but I don't know if he was necessarily... Is he a building block that they need to build around? Or would you have maybe...
JT Miller?
Yeah.
No. I mean, he's not a building block. I mean, your building blocks are Steven Stamkos, Victor Hedman, Mikhail Sergachev,
Nikita
your goaltender,
Kucherov.
Andre Vasilevsky. Right.
So why did they give him so much money? I mean, especially with Braden Point and
he's
Kucherov.
Only making $50,000 a year less than Andre Palat.
I mean,
JT Miller's a good player. He's a, you know, 20 goal kind of 50 point guy.
Yeah.
At the NHL level, but I'm with you. I mean, I would think that he would be more around $4 million a year as opposed to $5.2 million a year. But again, you know, really good player acquired from the New York Rangers in the McDonough trade, Drew. But I don't think the Lightning need to go big game hunting, because the Lightning went all the way to the Eastern Conference Final last year, and they obviously got beat by a much better Washington Capitals team.
Lightning were up 3-2 in that series, remember? I mean, the Lightning, you know, you're up 3-2. You have game 7 on home ice. Their offense just dried up in game 6 and 7. Because more often than not, I mean, the Lightning were the best team in the NHL for a lot of the season last year. Remember, they were so dominant early on that they had such a big lead in the Atlantic Division that they sort of took their foot off the gas towards the end of the year.
Right, and I agree with you. If you're Steve Yzerman, I mean, you're looking at Nikita Kucherov, and that contract is priority number one because most of your other good players are already under long-term contract. We talked about it. Steven Stamkos, Victor Hedman, Andre Palat's under contract for 4 more years. You know, Tyler Johnson is a guy whose name has been bandied about as far as moving him. He's got, I believe, 5 years left at $5 million a year. But I don't think you need to add more than a few depth players. And I'm not talking about, you know, 13th forward and 8th defense, but I'm talking about guys to fill out, you know, your bottom two lines. Cedric Paquette, he's a pending RFA, but, you know, you have guys like Yanni Gourde, who was really good on your third line. You know, I actually thought, you know, that Cedric Paquette had a pretty good year for the Lightning. But to me, you're acquiring, you know, maybe one or two forwards and maybe a defenseman here. But I don't think you're necessarily going to go after any big names that are available via free agency because the Lightning, I think, still are set up very nicely for next year.
I'd agree with that, Dave.
Not about the Lightning specifically. We were talking about goaltenders earlier in the show, and Kevin Woodley was tweeting about the fact that Chad Johnson looks like he'll go to St. Louis. So it looks like that answers our earlier question about who will be the backup in St. Louis.
And of course, we mentioned Chad Johnson potentially being a target for the Winnipeg Jets I guess Steve Mason's still available, with Mason getting traded about 3 or so hours ago, getting traded to the Montreal Canadiens in that salary dump move with Joel Armia being attached as well. And, I mean, you can see why the Canadiens wanted Joel Armia in particular. Jesperi Kotkaniemi said that he had a poster of Joel Armia up in his room as a kid, which is hard to believe because it's not like Joel Armia is old by any stretch, but that's how young Kotkaniemi is, just 18 years old, so that there's a lot of ties, and you have to know how happy he must be that his hero or that his idol as a kid is now his teammate with the Montreal Canadiens. It seems like it's going to be a pretty good fit for both the Montreal Canadiens, for Joel Armia, and for Jesperi Kotkaniemi entering his rookie season.
Yeah, Max Pacioretty, you know, sticking with the Montreal Canadiens is a very interesting one.
Max Pacioretty, there's Jeff Skinner that still needs to be resolved. Lots of players that still need to be resolved on the trade market in addition to the free agency market.
And you wonder if the Hurricanes hang on to Jeff Skinner. Now that they've made their move, they've traded Elias Lindholm and they've traded Noah Hanifin. You wonder if, you know, they say, hey, you know, Jeff Skinner actually had a pretty good year last year. What did he have, 25 goals last year? I mean, why not just keep him?
The problem is the relationship repairable with Jeff Skinner? I mean, if I'm Jeff Skinner and I know I've been shopped for as long as I have, and, you know, I mean, if a team's shopping you that aggressively and being fairly overt about it, to me, is that where you want to be? I mean, again, you're familiar with the team, but the fact is, you know, if you're clearly not wanted, you're clearly not wanted.
Well, if they're not signing him to an extent, he's an unrestricted free agent after this year. So if you're not signing him to an extension and you're starting the season with him, the trade talk doesn't die down. It just continues all the way right through the trade deadline.
Right. And
You're absolutely right. Is the relationship, I mean, is he unhappy there? We don't know. I mean, you know, obviously the team has explored the trade market for him significantly.
And talked about it. It's not like this is just media-driven speculation. Yeah. The actual team has discussed him as a specific trade asset.
Dave, Chris Dingman just texted me. He's ready to go, so maybe we head to break, and then coming back, we'll bring Chris Dingman on?
Yeah, we'll bring Chris Dingman on to talk about Marty St. Louis. We'll wrap up the show with that. We'll have him on for about 10 or so minutes when we come back. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's one final segment on this Saturday on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment, Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in the studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And remember, your destination for all the Winnipeg Jets news and audio, as we are less than 24 hours away from the start of the free agency frenzy period, is our website, IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome to the program two-time Stanley Cup champion Chris Dingman. Chris, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
No problem. My pleasure.
Chris, obviously we wanted to bring you on to talk about your former teammate, Marty St. Louis, with the Tampa Bay Lightning. Marty announced as one of the inductees into the 2018 Hockey Hall of Fame. You know, from your memory and your time with the Tampa Bay Lightning playing with Marty, what stood out to you the most about him as a professional and him as an NHL player? I mean, we know that he's undersized in a time when there was a game of giants. So how did Marty St. Louis, how did he succeed in spite of his size?
Well, I just think it's determination, number first and foremost, and he had a chip on his shoulder, like a really, really big chip, and he wanted to prove he could play. And as you just mentioned, you know, back then it was always, you know, when you're getting drafted in the first round, you had to be like 6'2", 6'3", and it was a bigger man's game with all the obstruction and hooking and holding, and, you know, he thought he could play, and he, you know, he believed he could play, so, you know, he had that that chip on his shoulder, whereas I'm going to prove everyone wrong, and I know. You know, he was in Calgary. We played in the minors together, actually. And, you know, he didn't kind of got an opportunity, got bought out, and then he had an opportunity in Tampa and got a chance to play. And that's what every guy, you know, wants or asks for. And he had that opportunity to play, and he made the most of it. So, you know, for me, just, you know, just that determination, just that he would battle. I mean, he wasn't obviously a big body checker or, you know, fighter or anything like that, but he would battle. He would battle for the puck. He'd go in the corner. You know, he's just very smart and very elusive and then the way he played.
You know, Chris, that team that won the Stanley Cup in 2014, I think most hockey fans and observers would say that that was one of the big highlights of Marty St. Louis' career. I imagine it was one of the big highlights of your career as well as winning the Stanley Cup with the Colorado Avalanche. But when you look back at that team and it had so many good players like Brad Richards and Vinny LeCavalier and Dave Andrechuk, how important was it to have such a great leadership group on that team that won the Cup in 04?
I mean, it's huge. I think any team that wins, and, you know, you look at the Capitals this year winning, and you see Alex Ovechkin, and, you know, he wanted to win so bad, and he didn't care if he scored or whoever scored, or he just wanted to win. And I think with, you know, that team we had is we had, you know, we had some veteran guys, and obviously Dave Andrechuk and Tim Taylor and some of the older guys. Freddie Modine was a veteran guy, and Daryl Sador on the back end. But we, you know, I equated to in looking at that team compared to the Colorado team, where I was very lucky to win the Stanley Cup twice, obviously. And that Colorado team was, that was a team full of established superstars and, you know, Hall of Famers, Patrick Waugh and Rob Blake and Peter Forsberg and Joe Sakic and Ray Bourque and going down the line. And, you know, the Lightning team was a team of up-and-comers where, you know, Dan Boyle and Marty St. Louis and Brad Richards and Vinny LeCavalier, those were superstars kind of coming into their own, and they're great, good players becoming great players. So, you know, I think that was a big part of it. I think, you know, Marty was a guy that would talk a little bit, and, you know, as did a lot of other guys. And, you know, it's huge. I think leadership is a couple different things. You can lead by talking, and you can lead by example, and the way you conduct yourself and the way you play. And, you know, I think, you know, like, I know Dave Andrechuk had a broken toe and I think maybe a broken ankle too. All I know is after every game, he had 2 feet in one of those ice tubs after every game. And as we know, when you're playing in the playoffs, everybody's hurt. Everyone has an injury. So, you know, leadership's a big part of it. I think, you know, just whether you're young or old, but we know we definitely had that.
You know, Chris, everybody knows that Marty St. Louis was a great offensive player. He had 94 points that year that the Lightning won the Cup. He won the Art Ross, the Hart Trophy, and then he won the Conn Smythe with 24 points in 23 games that year. And everybody knows that Marty St. Louis was a fierce competitor, but you played with Marty St. Louis for 4 years with the Lightning. What is something maybe that people don't know about Marty St. Louis as a player off the ice?
When he was younger, he was a gymnast. And he has the ability to walk on his hands.
He can walk on his hands?
Yeah, it was something we'd have a little fun with where, excuse me, we'd joke around. And, yeah, he could walk on his hands. He was unbelievable, his conditioning and his physique. And, yeah, so he's a gymnast when he was younger. And we'd always joke around if, you know, we had a competition or did something, he won or lost, and make him walk on his hands. So he'd literally walk down the hallway on his hands. So it's something that and very competitive at playing cards. So we had a pretty good card game when we were on the plane, and very competitive guy. So it was just a couple things right there in golf, and you name it. So guys at that level, and, you know, like Marty's just a guy that loved to laugh, loved to play the game, and, you know, loved to talk, loved to chirp, as, you know, majority of hockey players do. And You know, just little things like that. Just, you know, just a good guy, good family, and just fun to be around. So just, you know, a couple things there.
So, Chris, you know, you're a two-time Stanley Cup champion. We lunched with Colorado, once with Tampa Bay. If you had to wear one of the rings, which one would you wear?
If I had to wear one of them?
Yeah.
Neither. My wife doesn't let me. She says that. No, I'm kidding. They're, that's the hardest question to ask. And, you know, I think maybe the Colorado one, just because it's smaller, because now the rings are so big. The Tampa Bay Lightning one, it's beautiful, but it's huge. And I notice if I do wear it, and I very rarely wear it, I wear it to a wedding or a special function or something. The other two fingers on either side are usually all scraped up because it's so big, and these rings keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And, you know, I guess maybe if I had to choose, I'd choose that one only because it's my first one. It's a lot smaller and less gaudy, I guess.
Chris Dingman is a two-time Stanley Cup winner with both the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Colorado Avalanche. Chris, thanks for joining us this morning to talk about your former teammate, Marty St. Louis.
No problem. Anytime, guys.
Take care, Chris. Thanks again.
Cheers, Chris.
Chris Dingman, you know, great. You mentioned it he had told a great story on the show last time he was on a couple years ago about playing for the Brandon Wheat Kings, and there was a brawl. Gosh, I don't remember who it was against Moose Jaw, I think. It was one of the greatest stories that's ever been told on the program. We'll have to see if we can find it in the archives and maybe play it back at some point in time this summer. It was that good of a story.
You know, just quickly, Drew, you know, people remember Chris Dingman as being, an enforcer and more of a tough guy. He scored 40 goals back in the day with the Brandon Wheat Kings, so he could pop them in too.
Interesting tweet from Larry Brooks, another guy who's actually going into the Hockey Hall of Fame in the media class. He says, or he's speculating, that John Tavares might go the 1+8 route, meaning he signs a 1-year contract with the Toronto Maple Leafs to then sign an 8-year contract next season with the Maple Leafs, which would be a sort of an interesting way for him to get that 8th year that only right now the New York Islanders can offer. So, well, anyways, we'll see probably in less than 24 hours what's going to happen with regard to John Tavares.
Tavares' watch is about to come to an end, Drew.
Thank God. It's been going on for like 2 years. That's it for this Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support those fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. In case you missed any of the program, it's available for download on tsn1290.ca, on our website, illegalcurve.com, and wherever you get your podcast, just subscribe, get it sent to your device each and every week. Big props to producer Rory, doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Manuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.